Reuven Levy, speaking from the Chutz Shel Chesed Yeshiva in Yerushalayim, learning some interesting ideas regarding Moshiach. Okay, this is not going to come out very well on the tape, but we spoke at the end of last week an introduction about Moshiach. Who is Moshiach? When's he coming? What's he doing? How are we going to know? What I thought would be useful is to draw a timeline . Here's 6,000 years. 6,000 years is, according to many, the end of the current world order. 6 days of creation. Each day is likened to 1,000 years. From Pasuk, each day is like 1,000 years to Hashem. Each day is like 1,000 years. 6,000 years, after 6,000 years, what happens here? Shabbos. The eternal Shabbos, for at least for 1,000 years. 1,000 years of Shabbos, we don't need to get into that. When you get there, you'll know what to do. Right. Put your feet up for 1,000 years.
Not exactly.
Right, top, we'll find out. There's not a lot written, certainly not in the easily accessible sources about what happens here. So we don't really need to worry about that. What we're looking at is what happens before then. Before 6,000, Moshiach has to come. There's many different views on when he's going to come. The last possible time he can come is right here. According to, this view, right? I'm sure you'll probably find other views. But potentially, obviously, the last possible time he can come is right on the end of the 6,000. However,
so you're talking about 5,999.
So we're here, let's say here. So this goes a bit more, but let's say this is now 5,774. Right? And there are 226 years left. 226 years left. Until that time. Maximum is what's left. According to the mainstream view, there's different. There's always different views.
There's one that says 100 years less.
So the view that what I'm going to put on the board here is a description which is brought by Rav Pinchas Winston. And he writes many, but he's written many books. This is just the smallest one I could put in my bag that has it in it.
And that book
this
is
one. This one's called Geula Barachmin. So bringing Geula with Rachmin. He brings a view of the Zohar. The Zohar also has a view on Tzfiyat HaMetim and Olam Haba and Moshiach. And so he writes as follows from two sources. One is the Zohar, and the other is a source called the Leshem. Who is the Leshem? Leshem was the grandfather of Rav Eliashiv, Zatzal. And he was a big Kabbalist, he wrote quite a lot of things. Anyway, so what did he say? So he says basically this. The Zohar brings two different views of Tchiyat HaMetim. What's Tchiyat HaMetim? Resurrection of the dead. Okay, the dead will come back to life in whatever shape or form that will happen. And the Zohar brings two different views about how long that period is. The Gemara also has some different views, but he sticks with the Zohar view, which is it's either 210 years or it's 214 years. According to Rabbi Yehuda, it's 210 years. So Rabbi Yehuda says 5,790. Right? From there to there, 210 years. Rabbi Yitzhak. Rabbi Yitzhak, this is from the Zohar, says the period of Tichiyat HaMetim is 214 years. What they base it on, you'd have to go and study Zohar to see that, but they say this is the period of Tichiyat HaMetim. Right?
So, one
so the Zohar says
starts when?
So Zohar says there is a period of 210 years or 214 years for Tichiyat HaMetim, and the Leshem says that this period runs up until the 6,000. So the Leshem is placing them, those periods there, Tichiyat HaMetim. Just from basic logic, that the Tichiyat HaMetim has to come before the end of 6,000, because then we're all into Shabbos and we're holding a whole new inning going on. So Tichiyat HaMetim has to come kilu in our present lifetime, in our present structure. Before the 6,000.
So it's 57, what?
So what does that mean? 5790, 5786. So we're now in 5774. So that's 12 years away, or this is 16 years away?
Why do you need 200 years? Resurrection.
Ah, because there's a long period of time during which people resurrect. If the resurrection of the dead, certainly according to this view, doesn't happen on one day, suddenly everyone pops up. It's a slow process. They start with the Gedolim, Moshe Rabbeinu, the Gedolim, and then everybody else who is going to come back comes back. Not everyone comes back. Only those who are worthy.
I once heard Shmuel Esrei say five times, you mentioned Shmuel Esrei five times, he has a mission. So
yeah.
I heard this will be five, like you're saying, five stages,
five
to four.
Okay.
Yeah.
So anyway, so the Zohar says it lasts for 200 years. I don't know, I haven't done the Zohar, I have no idea why. That's what it says. So according to that, Pinchas Richardson says, this is the period of Tichiyat HaMetim. And he says, Rabbi Pinchas Richardson, that Moshiach will have to come before then. Moshiach will have to come, logically, historically, before the period of Tichiyat HaMetim starts. In which case, according to that view, we have either, what do we say, 12 years? 12 years, or 16 years maximum, during which period Moshiach shall come, according to that reasoning. It's an opinion, it doesn't have to be the only opinion, it doesn't mean that it's correct, it's an opinion.
Possible that there's also there won't be completion of Tichiyat HaMetim until the eighth thousandth year is going to is that possible? It has to put all of it's going to happen all within this 6,000 year period, all the Tichiyat HaMetim stages, or is it some won't get come up until the year 8,000
after Shabbos,
yeah, right,
and not during the period of Shabbos,
right.
Don't know. And what happens after that is
nothing happens in the 7,000, right? Nothing happens.
Yeah, and apparently not. Apparently it's global Shabbos. What happens after that, Tom, is a discussion. Okay. Now, on top of this, we've got, we've got some other well-known things happening at the same time. We've got Kibbutz Galiot. What's Kibbutz Galiot? The ingathering of the exiles. So according to many views, the ingathering of the exiles takes 40 years. the 40-year period of Kibbutz Galilee, whatever that means, which whatever that encompasses. Right, so that may well come before. It may be that there's 40 years Kibbutz Galilot. Could do the math if that brings you. That's 1986 and 1990. That's either 1986 or 1990. Would that be the beginning of Kibbutz Galilot if it was a 4-year period?
The latter date would actually make perfect sense, because that is the time when the Russian Empire fell and the Russians became coming in, and the Medina started changing rapidly. They had to adjust their economy, they had to make out loans, they had to build the infrastructure for the millions of Russians that made it here. And the start was probably the Gulf War.
Okay. The other thing we have is something called Chevle Moshiach. What's Chevle Moshiach? The birth pangs of Moshiach. So Chevle Moshiach also has a time frame. So what's Chevle Moshiach? So the Chevle Moshiach has I can't remember all my sources. I talked about a few different places. Chevle Moshiach, the Zohar says there's two different periods for Chevle Moshiach. Chevle Moshiach is 70 years and 9 months. Alright, so let's just stick with the 70 years. The 70 years, I know where you want to put 70 years from. Right? If you want to say we took that 70 years will take you to 2018. 4 years' time. Yeah. But we don't know where that 70 year period of Chevle Moshiach comes. Presumably, it comes before here. And ends here. That's the period before then. And the 9 months is the. There's actually three periods. There's 9 months, and then there's 1 day. Right? These are the three defined periods of unrest, we call it, preceding Moshiach. Chelepele Moshiach, meaning the birth pangs, the difficulties. 70 years, 9 months. 9 months is being subjugated by foreign nations, right, for 9 months will be under the control of some foreign nation, and then 1 day, that's the D-Day when everything happens, and it should have been Zachariah for Nine months is the period of time it takes for a woman to give birth, hence the Chevle Moshiach analogy. Oh. Right? And it says in Micha, you shall give them the time it takes for a child to be born. When Micha is talking about the Chevle Moshiach, he says you shall give them the time it takes for a child to be born. Hence you get the 9 months. Is a specific time period during this Chevle Moshiach, which Zohar says is 70 years. Maybe that 9 months is included But in this, the last 9 months, it might be after.
I've heard a different time.
Yes.
Of 1945, because that was a time when the survivors of the European yeshivas came to the United States and started setting up.
Uh-huh. Okay. Could be. I mean, I'm not all young age. There's none of this is exact, because it's not meant to be exact. We're not meant to expect every day. Moshiach coming. So,
what are the boundaries?
What does that mean?
What are the boundaries? Moshiach comes, but we all are supposed to be within a place. What are the boundaries of that place?
Why should we all be within a place?
Well, you said that there's a resurrection of some kind that takes place. The dead rise up.
Okay.
I'm saying, where are they going to be? Right where they're buried? They rise up there? Or they come to the Eretz Yisrael?
So the,
if they come to Eretz Yisrael, what are the boundaries of that?
The Gemara says in Eder, it's in Sanhedrin, it says that the Tanayim, people in the Gemara time, wanted to be buried in Eretz Yisrael. Why? Because in the resurrection of the dead, there was one view that only those in Eretz Yisrael would be resurrected. So then it was challenged. Gemara challenges it, said, but wait a minute, we see that there were great Gedolim buried outside in Chutz La'aretz. Do you want to tell me that they won't be resurrected? And the Gemara comes back and says, no, what we're saying is that those people will come through tunnels to Eretz Yisrael. So why do you want to, if that's the case, why do you want to be buried in Eretz Yisrael? You don't need to be buried in Eretz Yisrael if you're going to come anyway through the tunnels. So because it's going to be tough to roll through the tunnels, it's not going to be pleasant. Yes, ma'am.
Isn't there an idea that where Tzadik is buried is actually like Eretz Yisrael? Like Haman, for example.
Okay, yeah.
And where the Babish Rebbe is.
Okay. Maybe, yeah.
Yeah, so I wonder.
I don't think that's...
Well, you still have to get here, actually. They say that the Egyptians are building those tunnels.
Cool question.
The boundaries.
But it's all an underground business. All right. It's all an underground business.
Abraham was instructed by Hashem to walk the boundaries of Eretz Yisrael.
Okay.
North, south, east, and west.
Okay.
And they made a kingdom with the land for us.
Okay.
Because he did that.
Yeah.
So that's what I was asking. Are those the boundaries?
So it's there's no of Eretz Yisrael.
Yeah.
It's never wrong about
Israel, right?
Of what the biblical Eretz Yisrael has, depends which, with different boundaries.
Right.
Stretches all the way up to from Syria, it goes, depends if Jordan or not. But it's not necessarily so crucial for Mashiach. Is there's different views about what's going to happen when Mashiach comes in terms of where everyone's going to be, right? Probably brings it another place of. Those in Eretz Yisrael at the time of Mashiach will experience Mashiach. Those outside Eretz Yisrael will have to make their way to Eretz Yisrael, and they'll be on a lower level. It brings there's a book called Tuv HaAretz written by one of the Gedolim, which says that the people in Chutz La'aretz will complain and say, why don't we have wings and why can't we fly like those in Eretz Yisrael? And Mashiach will explain to them, Mida Kenegi Mida, you weren't interested in coming before, so you're going to have to wait to grow your wings. And for meantime, the people in Eretz Yisrael who came, who gave them, they've got keen wings, whatever.
Isn't it the week before the resurrection of the dead, they have to buy in the time from the resurrection?
There's also a view whether or not when will death cease to be? At some point, there will cease to be death. but maybe that will only come after everybody's been resurrected. Right? So even those who are currently alive in the Yamot HaMashiach will need to die at least once in order to be resurrected completely anew and in a new, perfectly clean, healthy body, and not in the old one that was still a bit contaminated. So, these are still things. What?
It could be during the period of resurrection, we could die.
It could be during the... Yeah. Okay. There is another period of 45 days, which is not everyone holds by, but Rav Avraham Azulai. Yaakov, who's Rav Avraham?
The cousin of Avraham, who's the grandfather of the Chidah.
The grandfather of the Chidah, there we go. And you,
yeah. The phenomenal of Yehuda.
Okay, so he says there's a 45 day period.
Read this from a Midrash.
Huh?
Read it from some old Midrashim.
Ah, okay. In a Midrash, there's a 45 day period of where we have to be in the desert. Whatever that means. Whether it's a Mashal, it's a Midrash, that we have to go out into the desert, and we have and that will separate the Sadiqim from the Beinonim, from the Rashayim.
The Midrash says that 70 nations, the 70 nations will attack us in Israel like hungry wolves on a young lamb. And there will be an immense battle, there will be a total debacle. A lot of people will die, a relatively small number will remain alive in Yerushalayim, and those will be exiled into the desert for 45 wilderness for 45 days.
Right.
After those 49 days, the final Beit HaMikdash comes down on a platform of fire. Boom, in place.
Uh-huh.
Mashiach shows up, and with the keys in his hand, appoints the Kohen Gadol, says, get to work.
Yep.
Okay. Well, we're talking about Gula Rachamim, though.
Huh?
We're talking about Gula Rachamim, which is not the
word. Well, it depends what the Rachamim is, right? The
Rachamim... Because the...
We don't,
the war is still up because we have to get rid of the Erev Bav and the fake Jews.
Look, so what's the Rachamim? The Rachamim is in two ways. Firstly, how it happens, how you fulfill the words of the Navi, all of this, most of this is Tanakh as well, but right, have to be fulfilled. The question is how they're going to be fulfilled. Right? We have very strong statements in here. Right? Let me give you a strong statement. Right? I'm gonna take them through fire and whatever. Right? Does he mean real fire? Or does he mean a fire of teshuvah, of embarrassment, how the wording of the Navi will actually be fulfilled is yet to be decided. The other thing is the Rachamim is also depends on each individual person. How each individual person experiences what's going on is also not fixed. Meaning, there is troubles, there's unrest, there is stuff going on. How I personally view that, understand it, accept it, fight with it, I'm happy with it, is down to the how much I'm working on myself too, right? So if the rockets are falling, right, we know that during the Gulf War and etc., that while the rockets were falling, people from this yeshiva were going around doing hafatzah, knocking on doors, right, during the sirens, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right, other people were sitting in their bomb shelters scared for their lives while someone was knocking on the door who was really actually taking it very, very well. So the individual person is also that's also a rachamim. It's all going to be happening around me, but am I going to be scared under the bed, or am I going to be like, Baruch Hashem, thank you, finally, let's get on with it, right? How am I going to personally take it? What?
Let's say this rain is now walking, so you put you in danger. So yep. Is it a law? Put you in danger.
You're not allowed to intentionally put yourself in danger, but that said, I know I'm not giving a psak on this, obviously, because I can't give a psak in, but something that occurs to me is that when the rabbis look at that, they look at statistics. What does it mean to not put yourself in danger? So, for example, if one of the questions that I heard from Rav Tatz, who's a big rabbi but also used to be a doctor, he gets lots of medical questions asked towards him. And one of the questions often he asks, he answers, depends on risk. Am I allowed to undertake this operation? Such and such an operation. The particular Shia I was listening to was on plastic surgery. Is a Jew allowed to have plastic surgery? So one of the questions is, am I putting myself in unnecessary risk by taking this surgery just to look nice? One of the halakhic questions you have to answer. So he said, no. He said, you have to look at seriously what the risks or what the percentages. And most plastic surgery, like the stuff can go wrong, but it's very minor, relatively speaking, so it's not a consideration. The chance of a rocket falling on my head when I'm doing half that is very minor. It's not putting myself in intentional danger. It's not, might be not the smartest thing, right? But in terms of the, I'm not allowed to put myself where there's a great danger, because then that's, I'm relying on a miracle that I didn't get hit. But if I'm walking around the streets and I didn't get hit by a rocket, so it wasn't such a miracle. It was a kindness from Hashem. Hashem's allowed to do kindnesses very easily for me, if I trust in him. But I'm not asking him to, you know, to give me a bulletproof vest and I'm going to walk through a minefield. Maybe. Plus, they did that on the instructions from Rav Arash. Oh, they, well, you know, for my
stuff. During that same war, I was living in Emmanuel.
Yeah.
And you get the signs, you see missiles, and you could see the missiles going overhead.
Okay.
This orange stripe going through the sky.
Right.
Then one evening when we were in the Kollel, there was a siren. We looked outside. We didn't see an orange stripe. We saw an orange disc.
Okay.
It means it's directly over your head.
Okay.
The chance of getting away at that point is zero.
It depends where it lands.
Listen. It was a disc,
okay,
not a stripe. That means it's right overhead if it's a disc.
Okay.
Okay.
So you can't get land somewhere.
Hmm?
Still has to land somewhere. And
it has to land, but if it's a disc, it means coming this way.
This way.
Anyhow, so what we did was,
still has a radius.
So instead of freaking out,
yeah,
we were Breslovers, we did a dance, we danced in a circle singing, and all of a sudden, this thing moves. You know what a dog leg is? It went like this, and that, and landed in our village.
Oh,
yeah. Okay, we saw the change, the thing move, and it's... It doesn't move from a breeze or a wind. It's very heavy, this thing. Something bigger than a normal wind moved it.
Yeah. Okay.
Isn't that so?
Okay. Yes.
When there's a prophecy,
and then
negative, you can change it.
Hashem blew it.
When there's a prophecy, it's negative, you can change it.
There is. You're right. It's a negative prophecy, can be changed. You're right.
Well, last year, in this room, we had a missile word.
Do we?
Last year,
yeah.
It's been a year,
mm-hmm.
And all we did was we went downstairs one flight because we're on the fourth floor.
Okay, Tom. So, what's going to happen? What's going to happen? So, Chevle Moshiach is a Tom. Is the birth pangs? What's the birth pangs? The birth pangs is that you need to get ready for the birth. To get ready for the birth, the mother needs to know something big is going to happen, and we have to wake up and get our house in order, right? And again, the birth pangs are are compared to a woman because they get closer and closer as the D-Day arrives, and they also get stronger and stronger. Initially, it's just a little bit of a, and by the end, apparently, I've never experienced it. Yeah. Right, it's very strong. It's very painful. Right, it's like mashal of a child that needs to tidy his room before Shabbos. Right, so on Thursday afternoon, the imam mentions to the kid, you know, you should tidy your room before Shabbos. Okay, imam, thanks. Friday morning, you know, you should tidy your room before Shabbos. You know, okay, dear. Friday, lunchtime, still not done. I've told you already, you need to do it. Right? And then by the time you get to, look, Go to your right, because Shabbos is coming. Right? So it needs to be more powerful, it needs to be stronger, it needs to be. We still haven't fixed what we need to fix. The Zechariah says as following what will happen. There we go. There will be in all the land two portions that will be cut off and perish, and one third will be left. I will bring that third into fire and purify it, as one purifies silver and refine it as one refines gold. There's a two-thirds, one-third prophecy. The two-thirds won't make it and one-third will. That, from the commentaries I've seen, is said to be talking about the world. Two-thirds of the world will be destroyed and one-third will remain. And that third will be purified as silver and gold, which suggests two different types of purification, silver and gold.
But does that refer to the Jewish people?
The nations.
Or
the nations.
It refers to the nations?
Not that the Jews are the nations.
The Jews are still separate.
Yeah.
It's a separate thing. This is the nations. Can we pick the nations we want to have destroyed?
No, that's Hashem's job. Hashem is going to exact justice at the right time from the right people. You see, because what's going to happen? The Yamod HaMashiach is the revelation of truth in the world. The revelation of truth that Hashem exists. That there's only Hashem. That it's all Hashem. Right? And that is only fitting, is only Shayach. It only works for people who can accept that. Who can live with that truth. Right? Just like in Egypt, we saw that, at least according to Rashi and many other commentators, four-fifths didn't come out. Because they wasn't Shayach, it wasn't something they could live with. Many people now can't live with that, can't accept that. Right? Well, Rabbi Brody says, said a few times, that when he's in the States, he's asked the audience a number of times if Moshiach came today and the government of Israel laid on a fleet of 100 jumbo jets at JFK and said, guys, get on, whatever you can pack, you've got a bag each, put it in the bag and get on. Moshiach's here, everything's changing. Everything's good, we're going home, you're going to have a house waiting for you, you're going to have whatever you need in Eretz Israel. And it was true. You didn't think it was a joke. You understood it was true. What was going on? Would you come? Said out of the audience, three, four people hold their hand up that they would come. They still wouldn't. I'm actually quite happy where I am. I understand that's very nice. My chefs are very good for you. Enjoy, but tough. There's a Mets game tomorrow. Yeah, there's stuff going on here, right? Why do I want to leave? Right. So the only people who genuinely want to be part of it will be part of it. It will be a self-selected group. Right? Anyone who wants to be there will be there. Anyone who doesn't. It's not like no one is going to have any complaints at the end. Oh, come on, let me in. Oh, anyone who genuinely wants will make sure at the right time. We'll see the signs. We'll experience what they need to experience. Hashem gives everyone a chance.
Ah, you mean just for that? So
maybe. Also, maybe, but Tom, we don't really understand what Am Yisrael is, the neshamas, and how the neshamas all split up, and you've got a bit of your neshama here, a bit of it over there, and which bit is going to get resurrected, and which bit isn't. It's all still hidden from us because we've got enough problems trying to make breakfast from worrying out whether part of my neshama is over in Australia and part of my neshama. It's too much to work.
The only difference is that when the neshama comes, the Gemara says the only difference will be that goyim don't have control of us anymore.
Okay.
So that's the cool sorrows will say, look, I know that Gemara. Why should I jump on the plane? The Kohen won't bother me anymore. I can stay here in America. Maybe that's why they're not. Maybe those who know the Gemara are reluctant to come. Because Mashiach said, yeah, I don't know.
Even if it's true. Right, it's a Rambam that says that. The only thing that will change is the subjugation of the nations. Which is actually a machloket in the Gemara, which one, whether it's that tov. But even if that we hold by that view, then that doesn't mean whether or not I should come. It's just telling me what's going on. You will have a blue tie. Oh, he's got a blue tie. I think I'll wait in the States. So what? It doesn't matter whether or not things are going to change.
Do you think Mashiach will demand afterlife from all the Jews and consorts? Do they have to come?
It appears to be a given, because it would be, I know in my view, I've read it somewhere else, so it's not just my view, but I've read it somewhere, it makes sense. It would be a Chilul Hashem. It would be a Chilul Hashem that Hashem is bringing Mashiach, and you have Jews who are outside, on the outside, looking in, saying, well, you know, enjoy yourselves, we'll stay here and go shopping. Right? It couldn't be. Couldn't be. So either way, everyone will have to be here.
We'll see either in Tanis or Hagiga, where Rish Lakish would not shake someone's hand who was living in Babel because he did not make Aliyah. And he blamed them for everything that was happening in Eretz Israel, because there was still a large community in Babel.
Okay.
But we have the same variable. We have people here, the people in Hutzlars, which are pressuring their children to come back after a year.
Oh, look, we still have something called the Erev Rav. Erev Rav are part of Am Yisrael. Erev Rav, their job is to prevent Geula. Because they know when Geula comes, they're finished. There's no more Erev Rav. So their job is to delay Geula by any way they can. And that means putting people off from coming to Eretz Yisrael. One of the things that they will do. And they can be the biggest rabbi with the biggest black coat and black hat. Doesn't mean he's not Erev Rav. Rav Nachman writes that that in the end of days, that rabbis will have heresy dripping from their pockets. Right? There's Rav de Kalipa, the Rav de Kedusha, Rav de Kalipa. Again, I Zot Lumat Zot, one against the other, Hashem creates. Hashem creates free choice. Right? So there are people, why are they rabbis if they're Erev Rav? Because you get a lot of respect for being a rabbi. You get a lot of kavod. People were looking up to you, doing what you say. Oh, it's very good. It's a very good job. Don't have to believe it myself, personally.
Decent
job. So that for sure happens. That for sure happens. Tov, Be'ezrat Hashem, will continue tomorrow looking at the question of who is Moshiach.